color is all important. A-A-O why? A-A-O because color equates with force, and so, for the matter of that, do musical pitch and rhythm. A-A-O you are opening a completely new world to me, Miss Le Fay, and yet I think I knew it existed. I knew the exact delimitations of science, I knew where the proven ended and the speculative began, and I have always been very careful of the distinction, particularly in my own line of work, where we always have to be on the lookout for the hysterias, and suggestion plays so big a part. Miss Le Fay, I have seen things happen to the mind through the body, and to the body through the mind that, well, you might believe, but nobody else would. You asked me whether I believed in the power of the mind over the body, and I poured scorn on you. I was thinking of those new thought tinkerings with organic disease. Of course they can't do anything except administer placebos, though placebos are well worth having to the poor devil that's got the disease. But genuine mind healing of a genuine disease, well, I have yet to see a case. Ayo, you should see me do mind healing, Miss Le Fay. Funniest thing you ever saw. A large part of my work is distinguishing between organic and functional nervous disorders. The functional cases, of course, are the hysterics. In comes the paralytic on his stretcher, and we get to work. Some folks use a mallet, I don't, I use my fingers. Ayo, so you can't use your arm, my poor man? Ayo, no sir, I can't, what's your trade? Ay, he tells me. Ayo, foreman bully you? Ay, then comes a tale of insult and oppression and general injury to his amour propre. I get my fingers on his elbow, a Malcolm leant over towards me. Ayo, no, I won't do it to you, it will hurt your bruises. Ay, he laid a hand on my knee. Ayo, so you've been paralyzed from the waist downward, have you, madam, since your motor accident? Ayo, yes. Dr. A. Malcolm's fingers suddenly pressed. I kicked out sharply and involuntarily. He chuckled. He repeated the pressure, and up came that ridiculous foot once more. Ayo, you do that again, I said I, ayo, and I'll kick you in good earnest. Ayo did get kicked in good earnest once by an alleged paralytic, I said he, ayo, and it very nearly cost me my front teeth. If I drew a commission on all the money I've saved insurance companies, I'd be a millionaire. But the patients aren't all frauds, you know, by any manner of means. Lots of them genuinely think they are ill. So they are, but not physically. And that's the sort that get healed at these big religious meetings at the Albert Hall. I've known my own cases come up there, Miss Le Fay. And some damn fool of a GP gives AM a certificate to say they're genuine physical healings. It's not my business to spoke their wheels. But you can see what I've come to think of these things, can't you? AM, not that I blame GPS for making mistakes over the central nervous system. I know what gets sent up to me from our own outpatients. What I blame them for is putting their names to a thing they haven't checked up on. It seems to me that when people go in for these mystical things they take leave of their wits, Miss Le Fay. What happens to them? AO auto-hypnosis and deliberately induced dissociation of personality are part of the method of the mysteries. Some people know what they are about, and some do not. Those that do not, get dissociated and stay dissociated. AOC. Artificially induced and localized insanity. Hypersuggestible to start with, and then cultivate it. That was suggestion you were giving me this evening, Miss Le Fay. Ayo, no it was, Dr. Malcolm. But there was something more to it than that. It started as suggestion, but it ended as something much more. Or rather, it would have ended as something much more if I had let it go on, but I pulled it up in the early stages, as it was our first attempt at working together. And I did not want to put too much strain on you. Ayo, so you were just trying my paces, were you? Ayo, yes. Trying your paces, picking up the starting point and getting you used to the feel of the forces. Ayo, and the next stage? Ayo, we have got our starting point in your recurring dream. That gives us all we need. Now I will be teaching you the technique we use, And you will be gradually getting used to the force and we will be able to increase the voltage. What does my recurring dream give you, Miss Lefay? It gives us, both you and me, access to the higher levels of your consciousness, the levels that lie beyond the subconscious to which ordinary, fleeting dreams give access. He looked at his watch. Good lord, look at the time. I have made you a visitation. Lucky tomorrow is Sunday. May I come in and fix your hand? It will want doing. You may. You will be very welcome. But tell me this before you go, and tell me frankly, as you would if you were one of your own patients, what effect has your experience this evening had upon you? He smoothed his graying red hair, pushing it back from that wonderful forehead with both hands, a very characteristic gesture of his. To begin with, I was half glamoured and half sceptical. Now I am not nearly so glamoured nor nearly so sceptical. I can see that this business has a psychological aspect that comes within the range of reason, just as I could see that yoga has a physiological basis in the central nervous system. I can see that you understand that basis, which is more than the new thought woman did, and I can see that you are a sensible woman, which is also more than she was. I shall thoroughly enjoy experimenting with you, especially if you will allow me to keep systematic records of what we do and the results we obtain. I am turning over in my mind the question as to whether you are an exceedingly clever hypnotist with a knowledge of psychology which you use in combination with the imaginative powers of a first-class novelist, or whether there is something more in it all than that, as I see you believe. I don't know. I am keeping an open mind. I haven't seen anything, so far, that couldn't be explained psychologically, but it is early days yet, and you may have a few cards up your sleeve that I haven't seen. I have not yet discovered where the risk lies which you take so seriously. You might capsize the IRT type of youth, but I should not think there was very much you could do to a tough old bird like me. However, I'm quite willing you should have a free hand to do your damnedest. I'm with you, Miss Lefay. It is exceedingly interesting. Will you write up the records? Will, I said he. Will you tell me one thing before you go? Have I brought you peace? Yes, certainly you have. I feel very comfortable and rather sleepy. He rose. I accompanied him to the door. He paused, hesitating on the threshold. I drew my fur about me and strolled slowly down the road with him. He did not speak till we came to a standstill on the wharf. Then he said, how did you know I wanted you to walk down the road with me? It is my business to know things. Can you read my thoughts? More or less. If you put any force behind them in my direction, I expect I should know it. Do you know when I lie to you? Yes. He stood staring across the now ebbing river towards his own rooms. Yes, Miss Lefay, you have given me peace, the peace that passeth all understanding, and I thank you for it. He lifted his hat and turned on his heel and left me. Chapter 11. Next morning my hands were so swollen and stiff that I could neither dress nor do my hair, but sat in front of the fire in a white velvet dressing gown, toasting my toes in their scarlet mules and drinking chocolate and wondering when Malcolm would turn up to give me the massage he had promised. It was on an occasion like this that I found the disadvantage of having a gentleman char instead of the more usual charlady. I thought Malcolm would survive the sight of me in a dressing gown, for it differed but little save in the luminousness from the loose robes I habitually wore in the house, but I did not wish him to see me with my hair streaming over my shoulders. I called my domestic, who was busied about his duties. Mr. Meyard, I said, have you ever platted a horse's tail? Lord bless you, mum, I taken prizes at the Van Atmos parades. I thought it was more likely his charge had taken them than he had, but did not wish to hurt his feelings by pointing out the inaccuracy. Do you think you could plait my hair for me? I don't want any straws in it, or anything fancy like that. Of course I can. Dear fine. He set to work with my silver-backed brushes with great gusto, and had got my mass of hair disentangled and spread out like a cape when there came a bang on the knocker. Brush in hand, He went to the door, and I heard him greeting a friend. Ayo blimey, governor. Is it you? Ayo yes, it's me, AK Malcolm's voice. Ayo what are you doing with that brush, stealing it? Ayo now. Given all that up since I had this job. I'm doing a TMAR. He opened the door and ushered in Malcolm. Ayo take a seat, governor. I'll soon have Ayo finished. Ayo would you like a cup of chocolate? I said I, thinking it best to take everything as a matter of course. Ayo thanks very much, I said Malcolm, helping himself from the earthenware pot keeping warm in the embers. Mr. Meyard laid down my brush and started on a plait, backing away from me as the plait lengthened, Malcolm watching him. Ayo hang on to that for a alpha motim, will ye, sir? Ayo he said, handing Malcolm the tip to hold while he got to work on the other plait. Then, filling his mouth with a handful of hairpins, he twisted both plaits round my head in a very creditable imitation of my usual coiffure. Ayo the now. What d'ye think o'tm that, sir? I said my gentleman cha, surveying me with pardonable pride. Malcolm's eyes met mine for a brief second, which was all that either of us dared risk. Ayo fine, I said he. Ayo couldn't have done it better myself. Ayo an o'tm that's praise from the expert, a said Meyard, preening himself. Ayo seen you do some fine jobs while I was going at EM to the clinic. Ayo not so bad, I said Malcolm. Ayo each to his trade. How's the leg serving you? Ayo does me all right. Mightn't suit a beauty chorus, but then I ain't thinking at EM of joining at EM 1. Ayo he gathered up my toilet articles and took himself off. Ayo like me to powder your nose for you. I said Malcolm. I will, if you say the word. Ayo you wretch. I said I, completely taken aback at such a remark from Malcolm, for I should never have believed he had it in him. Ayo there's your report, I said he, dropping a sheaf of papers into my lap. Ayo can read it while I do your hands. I turned over the pages as best I could. On the first was a beautifully drawn diagram of my temple, complete in every detail, duly annotated with all the information I had given him. Next, in neat, formal handwriting, came a practically verbatim account of the astral journey I had taken him. Finally came an account of his subjective experiences. Ayo, from the beginning of the whole transaction I have had the sensation of being sucked down by a whirlpool. The sensation has been extremely painful when I resisted it, extremely pleasurable when I yielded to it. When Miss Aleph proposed to make a start on the work, I felt great anticipatory nervousness. Respiration hurried and slow, heart rapid and irregular, mouth dry, unpleasant sensations in epigastrium. Sweating. This continued till she left me alone when she went to dress, when I succeeded in getting myself in hand and calmed down a little. Ayo got myself in hand by telling myself that there was nothing in the whole business. That she was self-deluded, and that I was merely amusing myself. But when I saw her come down the stairs in her robes, I knew it was real. My nervousness, however, left me. Or, to be more precise, my agitation changed into a keyed-up feeling which was not unpleasurable. I knew, as soon as I saw her in her silver headdress, where I had seen her before. She was the woman I had always seen in my temple dreams. Ayo knew now that Miss Aleph, the woman in the temple, the body in the dissecting room dream, and the cloaked woman were all one and the same person, and I recognized that this fact must have significance. Ayo had a very curious sensation when Miss Aleph held up the curtain for me to get through the doorway. I felt as if more than a physical curtain was being drawn back, as if a curtain were being drawn back in my mind. Ayo the room was absolutely familiar, though smaller than I had expected. It seemed perfectly natural for me to walk up to the altar and stand there with my hands on it. My hands tingled all the time they were on it as if an electric current were coming through them. Ayo the mirror had a very curious effect on me. I kept on seeing things in it. I had thought for a moment it was an archway leading into another, and more elaborately equipped room. Then I saw in it the temple I have always seen, where I met the woman. Ayo, then Miss Elif made me lie down on the couch and began to describe things to me. These I saw in the mirror as she described them. Finally, I had the sensation of being on the other side of the mirror. Ayo omitted to say that it upset me for a moment when she put her hands on either side of my head. I got the whirlpool sensation again. When, however, I gave myself up to the pleasure of it, I passed straight through the mirror and found myself in the temple on the other side in her company. I then relived with great vividness, much pleasure and much agitation, my usual dream. In this instance, however, I had a peculiar sensation that instead of impersonating the priest, I was myself the genuine priest, and that in doing what I did, I was playing my proper part in a regular ritual. In consequence, instead of the dream concluding in shame, terror and self-loathing, I had a profound sense of satisfaction and fulfillment, as if my life had in some way opened up, like the opening of a door that led me through into wide spaces. So great was the sense of relief and gratitude that I with difficulty restrained my tears. Although entirely restored to normal consciousness myself, Miss Elif continued to appear to me as I had seen her in my vision. I gathered the papers together as best I could. Ayo, thank you, I said. Ayo, if there is one thing I respect more than another, it is the courage to be honest with oneself. Ayo have never found it difficult to be honest with myself, I said Malcolm, starting on the second hand. Ayo, my nature has never left me in the slightest doubt as to what was there and what it was like. I find it very difficult to be honest with you, however. I know, theoretically, that I can speak to you as man to man, and that you will understand, but I find it extraordinarily difficult to deal with a woman like that in actual practice. Do you know the kind of dream in which you are climbing about among girders or on a precipice, but are sufficiently awake to know that you are dreaming, and that you can throw yourself down with impunity? Ayo, and then, as you are just about to throw yourself down, comes an awful feeling that it mayn't be a dream after all, but a kind of risky reality. That's how I feel when I start to let myself go with you. I know it's all right. I know you know what you're about. And then there comes the awful feeling, my God, supposing it isn't anything out of the ordinary, and we're just making a mess of things. I tell you, I simply go cold all over. During all this recital, Malcolm, with a perfectly calm face and perfectly steady hands, was massaging my fingers. Ayo, you will lose that fear as you get habituated to the forces, said I. Ayo, well, I hope I shall, I said Malcolm, for it is very unpleasant. As a matter of fact, he added, Ayo, think I have cleared a lot of it in telling you about it. That was why I did it, in fact. I hope you don't mind these goal deliveries. You are, I take it, a woman with a pretty wide experience of life. There was a time when I resented that, but now I am thankful for it. Bend those hands at their wrist and move them about. They are suppling nicely. What do you generally do on Sundays? I said for Malcolm appeared to be hanging around at a loose end, rather like a stray dog, and I did not want him on my hands all day till the evening, when I would be ready to work with him again. I always used to go down to my wife one weekend and catch up with arrears of work the next. Nowadays, I don't know, I go for a walk in the park if it's fine and if it's wet, go to a concert, I don't care for the pictures. I don't care for concerts much, either, for that matter. I suppose I generally end by working, same as weekdays. It was not difficult to guess at the dreary emptiness of life for that man. He had nothing but his work and his duty to his wife, and now that last had been reduced to the bare minimum of supporting her. I had not the heart to turn him away completely, so sent him out to take his walk while I got dressed and attended to such few things as required my attention. In due course Malcolm reappeared, and ate his lunch with such gusto that I wondered what his landlady fed him on, or if, in fact, she fed him at all. Then I put him into my big chair with a selection of Sunday papers, and he went peacefully to sleep and slept till tea time. Malcolm as a visitor was really no trouble at all. Ayo, thought you said you suffered from insomnia, I said I when he was finally roused by Mr. Meyard bumping him with the tea trolley. Ayo, so I do, As a rule, I said he, Aeba not when you're around. I always go straight off to sleep then. Ael, do I take that as a compliment? I said I. Oh, you would, I said he, if you knew what a luxury it is for me to feel relaxed. We made a Yorkshire high tea of it, as I knew it would be late before we got another meal. Malcolm enjoyed it all like a schoolboy home for the holidays. I discovered that I was developing a soft spot in my heart for him, and liked giving him pleasure. Magic makes a curious bond of sympathy between the people who practice it together, and conversely, if things go amiss with the magic, the personal ructions are correspondingly vigorous. After tea, I tried to entertain Malcolm with comments on the contents of the Sunday papers, but he brushed me aside. Desultory conversation was a thing he had no use for. I'm going to ask you a question, he said. Which you may say I have no business to ask. Of course you need not answer it if you don't choose, and I shall make no attempt to draw conclusions. In fact, with a person like yourself, so far out of the ordinary run, one couldn't draw conclusions that would be likely to be anywhere near the mark. You made a remark to me once that you had had a pretty wide experience of men. What exactly did you mean by that remark? What you really want to know is exactly how far I go, said I. Malcolm reddened. I suppose so. But not with any personal reference, mind you. I think you know me well enough to know that. I suppose it is a thing every man wants to know about any woman who interests him. I want to know it, partly so that I may understand you, and partly so that I may be sure that you understand me, for if you do not, I could be damn dangerous to you. I will give you excerpts from my emotional history, I said. Not the whole of it, for that would bore you, being too long and too repetitive. As a girl I was plain, severe, serious-minded, critical and sharp-tongued. I was strictly virtuous, both by inclination and necessity, having, as you will understand from that catalogue of qualities, no opportunity to be otherwise. Later in life, after I touched the invisible side of things, I changed considerably, both in outlook and appearance. You certainly must have, if you were a plain girl, I said Malcolm. The invisible side of things, thought I, was evidently not without effect on Malcolm, either. When I came to study comparative religion, I found that there were many different kinds of morality in the world, both ancient and modern. Some worked well, and some did not, if one judged them by the happiness or otherwise of the societies they ruled. Ours, I soon came to the conclusion, was one of those that did not work well. I wondered, therefore, whether it was necessary to accord it more than the politeness it is always well to give to such an influential person as Mrs. Grundy, and concluded that it was not, for I saw its rules scrupulously observed, and yet result in misery and destruction. Malcolm stirred uneasily in his chair. Saw them systematically defeat their own ends. I also saw them disregarded, not only with impunity, but with, in many cases, excellent results. I concluded, therefore, that although a code of some sort there had to be if human beings were to associate together, it need not necessarily be the code we had got, for that appeared to be most lamentable in its workings. I therefore dropped Mrs. Grundy a curtsy whenever I saw her looking my way, for no individual is strong enough to defy openly the social code under which he lives, and set to work to formulate a code of my own that should really be effectual for the purposes it was intended to serve. It seemed to me that the trouble lay in the fact that sex was a dual-purpose contrivance. So many dual-purpose gadgets give trouble, don't they? It had to provide for the continuation of the race and at the same time for the happiness of individuals, and the two purposes were mutually antagonistic. What one gained on the swings, one lost on the roundabouts, and the real problem was to balance the rival claims. And how did you strike an adjustment? Asked Malcolm. Like the Hindus do, my friend, by allocating the rival claims to different ages. Why should I reproduce my race before or after my prime? Why should I, in fact, reproduce it at all in a densely populated country if I have other contributions to make to the common welfare? Distinguish, like the Greeks did, between sex for reproduction and sex for happiness, and I think you have the key. I, for my part, am a free woman and a priestess of the most ancient gods, that gives you the key to me. Ao can understand your studies changing your viewpoint, I said. Malcolm, Ao, but was it changed your appearance? Study doesn't do that. If anything, it makes you plainer than you naturally are because you don't get enough exercise. Ao, the thing that changed my appearance, I said. I, Ao, was learning to know the old gods in the ancient mystery teaching, for they give fullness of life, and I, who had been starved of life, suddenly began to feed upon them. I changed, I grew young again, I grew vital, and men who had never looked twice at me, looked, and looked again, and I fed on their feeling for me. You may think me a vampire, but a vampire is one who takes too much or who takes all and gives nothing. I never did that. For remember, human beings feed each other magnetically and emotionally all the time. You have only to look into your own life to see that. Ao, and what happens to you if you go hungry? Ao asked Malcolm. Ao, then you are restless, depressed or quarrelsome according to temperament. Ao, more of them. Ao, but in my company you go to sleep like a baby that has had its bottle. Ao, you are a highly magnetic woman, Miss Le Fay. Anyone can see that a mile off. Then why is it that instead of stimulating me, as one would expect, you calm me? Ao, because I know how to use my magnetism, how to turn it on and off at will. You will never find me guilty of the cruelty of increasing the pressure where there is no adequate outlet. Ao, have discovered that, and I appreciate it. It means that I can be happy with you without having the life worried out of me, and I am deeply grateful to you. You have a terrific emotional effect on me, as I am afraid I have been unable to conceal, but you do not stimulate me sexually, no, not even when circumstances compel me to hold the end of your pigtail. Ao laughed, and Malcolm curled his lips in the grim smile that did duty with him for mirth. Dusk had fallen and I was ready for work, for I do not work, if I can help it, during daylight. I took Malcolm up to my robing room. Ao, as soon as my hands are better, Ao said, Ao, you shall have your robes. Ao, you make them? I said he. Ao, one can hardly expect to buy them ready-made, Ao said I. Ao, yes, I make them, and I make them entirely by hand, and I magnetize them as I make them. Ao, should like to wear the robes you made me, I said Malcolm. Ao, can't make your sandals, though, Ao said I. Ao, you will have to get those yourself, ordinary bailing sandals, and I will gild them for you. Ao left him there, and went on up to my temple to robe myself. I could hardly do so in front of Malcolm, for we strip when we robe. Nothing of mundane wear is worn in magic. He, for his part, would not get the full scope of the experience until he, too, was properly dressed, so perhaps it was just as well his robes could not be ready at once. I stood before the altar, my hands upon it, and gathered myself together. There are times in magic, at the start of an operation, when cold fear takes me by the heart at the responsibility I am incurring. I am deliberately, guided by no other light than that of my human judgment, setting machinery in motion that will manipulate cosmic forces. I do not mind when I alone am concerned, but when another person comes into it, it is another matter. I spend long hours in meditation, I count time as nothing, I wait and watch for the signs to come along and will not move without them. Finally, feeling as if I were going to my own execution, I lay my hand on the invisible lever and engage the gears, and always, as I do so, I say the words of the Eastern Pledge, I am thy sacrifice. There are times in every magical operation when I ask myself if I am self-deluded, am I really what I think I am? This is due to the discrepancy between the two modes of consciousness, the normal brain consciousness, and the higher consciousness that includes subconsciousness and transcends it, for it contains not only the memories of this life, but of all past lives and all their knowledge. In trance work we disconnect the normal consciousness and use ultra consciousness only, in magic we use both modes of consciousness simultaneously. We have to use the psychological analog of double-door clutching, and inevitably there is a loss of power as the gears disengage and re-engage. It is at that moment that the horrible doubts and fears come in.